We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get into this podcast, one quick programming note. My audio for this episode is all jacked up because for some reason, the application that we use to record these podcasts decided to recognize the microphone in my headphones instead of the very expensive podcasting microphone that I have plugged into my computer. It's frustrating. It sounds like I'm talking through a paper bag. So please forgive me. Blame it on the quarantine life.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Pulse Podcast. It is Monday, March 23rd, day 13 for me in isolation, social distancing. I don't know if it's technically quarantine because I still see my neighbors in the life, but I do have the one and only Bobby Regan with me again, live from Cincinnati, Ohio. And Reeves, how are you doing, sir? How are you surviving this social distancing and isolation and not seeing people every day?
We're surviving. Luckily, I've been able to come up with ways to see people. One of my good buddies lives literally around the corner from me. So Friday at like 5 o'clock, I walked down to his front porch and we hung out on his front porch 6 feet away from each other and had a few beers. So that definitely like helped reset the clock almost in terms of just human interaction with somebody outside of my 6-month-old and my wife. And then we've done different things. Like my college buddies and I, on Friday, we had like a 10-person Zoom meeting, just drinking and like hanging out via internet. Saturday, we were all betting horses. So we all hopped on different like FaceTimes on that, just watching horse racing together. So we're getting through it. But the days are starting to run together, man. I have no idea if it's Monday, like days just don't make sense anymore. Everything's it's just the same 24 hours over and over again now.
Yeah, we really just need to get rid of the whole weekly calendar idea. Like what is a Monday? I got to look it up. Every single day, I have to look up to see what day it is. And every single time that I look up and see what day it is, I'm like, how the hell is it only this day? Like today, I was like, how the hell is it only a Monday? It feels like at least a Wednesday already.
I know what day it is if like what pops up on my DVR the next morning. Like I know if it's like if Modern Family pops up, I'm like, oh, okay, like it's Thursday because Modern Family's on Wednesday. If it's a 30 for 30, it's like, okay, well, those are on Tuesday, so this is Wednesday. It's the only way I know when things are actually like what day it is.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am at this point too. Luckily for me, like we have a whole bunch of families like in our neighborhood that I am able to like see and like we'll go out and just ride bikes in circles around the neighborhood, and yeah, I'll be able to like hang out with the dads and the moms and actually have conversations with adults. And you know, like the other day we took like a 2 mile, my son was on a scooter and I walked the dog and we went 2 miles down to the Wawa with one of the neighbor families. So it's nice to get out of the house and get a little bit of fresh air and be able to actually like pretend like I'm not just sitting and hiding out in my house scared of the virus.
We have a UDF, which is like a Wawa, like 0.3 miles from our house, maybe less than that. So it's one that, okay, like my wife and I, like we'll strap our kid in to like, we have like the baby Bjorn, I guess technically the baby Bjorn, and just like walk down there. And it's like just passing people on the street waving. I'm like, all right, can reset the clock like 15 minutes in my head now.
All right, a couple things that we have to get through before we actually get into today's content. First and foremost, once again, I want to ask people to leave a review asking for the games that you would like us to talk about on the Run It Back podcast. I do want to give a shout out to Marquette fan Alan Bykowski. I hope that I pronounced that right, Alan, because he told us to watch the Marquette-Kentucky game from the 2003 national title, which was a combo of kissing Tess's ass and making producer Tess very, very happy while also trolling you for talking about a Kentucky loss. So shout out to him, because I think that that was a very, very perfect idea for a game for us to listen to. So if you guys have any recommendations for NCAA tournament games for us to go back and rewatch, please, please leave us a 5-star review and mention them in the comments. And we're going to try to get to all of them. Hopefully, our goal, Reeves, I don't know about you, but I want to be able to do one of these every day or at least one a week during the offseason for the entire offseason. So I'm legit looking forward to Thursday night and like watching a game. We haven't decided which one we're going to do yet. Watching a game and talking about it the next day.
I was going to say one a day. Like, how deep into this quarantine are we going here?
I don't know, dude. By June or July, we might have to do one a day.
Seriously.
It might get to that point. The second part of it is, once again, it's the craft beer cast. And I haven't talked about the beers that I've been drinking for a couple. I just keep getting sidetracked and distracted. But I am drinking a Lagunitas Memory IPA. I've never heard of it before. When I went to the beer store most recently, I saw that there was like tall boys that, you know how they always have like the mix and match six packs?
Oh yeah.
But they always like, it's always the only ones they put in there are the ones that like they charge you $11.99 and they put the ones that are like $10.99 six packs in there. So they like, you think you're getting a deal, but they're actually like making money off of you not being able to decide on one kind of beer that you want to get. So every time that I see any tall boys in there, when I know that they broke up like the four packs that are $17, like I just scoop them all up. And there were four Lagunitas Memory IPAs in there that are, I don't know. I haven't decided how I feel about them. But it's a tall boy and it's 8% alcohol, so I'm not going to complain about it.
You'll love my beer store because all they really have, like they have three fridges full of mix and match tall boys only.
Can I guess what you're drinking? That yeah, Streetside IPA with a watermelon Jolly Rancher thrown in there.
I am drinking Streetside, but it is not an IPA. Shout out Streetside. They came and delivered beer to me on Saturday.
Shout out to Streetside, man. I love that.
They are. They were going around, and then they reached out to me and was like, hey, if you want something, like we'll come make a special delivery to you. I was like, you got it. No problem.
I love you guys.
Seriously. But this is
did you say I love you? Because if you don't, like if someone offers to bring you free beer and you don't say I love you, I feel like you are a little unappreciative.
I went a step further. I told my guy Garrett, who delivered it to me, that I was apologized. So I felt bad for him because he's a diehard Dayton fan. So I felt that was a little more personal than just say I love you.
We gotta get them to brew us our own CBT podcast. Beer. We need a CBT. You know what? If you
get them to make the name of beer for me.
the Riggs IPA. I just want a CBT IPA.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'm trying to think of happier times. So I went with they just canned it earlier this week. It's called Raspberry Beret. It's just a raspberry Berlin of ice. It's just a real smooth Berlin of ice. So I'm trying to think of. It was warm weather out today here in Cincinnati. So I'm trying to brighten my mood up in my basement.
I'm so jealous. It was under 40 degrees and rainy today. Like yeah, we couldn't even get outside.
60 and sunny. We went for a good like 35 minute walk today.
All right. Well, good for you, man. Good for you. All right. I think it's time to actually get into the college basketball content. We are going to make our all fat guy team. I do want to ask you about your office character power rankings. Because I have some serious, serious problems with the way that you rank those characters on Twitter today. And I do want to talk about Kansas and this whole, like, Kansas needs to hang a banner deal, which is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But let's start with I unveiled my preseason top 25 on, I guess it was Sunday, but, technically this week. And I got some questions. I got some things that we need to talk through because I'm thinking that like next year, based off of what I think is going to come back, I think we're going to be having a couple of really, really, really good teams at the top of college basketball. So first and foremost, who would you have as the number one overall team heading into next season?
I had Villanova, which it feels like more and more when I see these top 25 come out, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's you and on NBC Sports, whether it's other websites, whatever, it seems like Nova's pretty close to a consensus number one.
They're getting there. I guess the big thing is, do you think Jeremiah Robinson Earl comes back, and are you assuming that Sadiq Bey is gone?
I think both leave. I say that, but I thought that before, obviously, everything hit the fan with the coronavirus. I thought that Robinson Earl was for sure going to leave. I could see him maybe coming back. I don't know. That's the toughest thing about these rankings is we're guessing on who's truly coming back. I'm just starting to trust them, man. Like they're gonna be a top 11 team at worst, and if they do get Robinson Earl back, and he takes that jump into the sophomore level of just being more assertive and toughens up, especially against top competition. Even if they lose Bay, like you still have Gillespie. You know, Justin Moore, I think, is going to be fine. Jermaine Samuels, we know who he is. The real thing is if Brian Antoine comes back and turns into what I think a lot of people kind of expected out of him.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I think Sadiq Bey was clearly the best player on that team last season. And I think that he would, you know, if he comes back, I think that, you know, along with a couple of the freshmen that are coming in and Luca Garza, I think Sadiq Bey is right there as like, your top competition for National Player of the Year if he happens to come back. Now, that said, he's also a guy that, like, NBA, I don't understand why NBA teams aren't higher on him than they are. You know, he's like a legit 6'9". Yeah. He was the best defender on Villanova this past season. He averaged 17 points a game. He could play on the ball, and he shot like 47% from three. Like, why the hell is he going in like the mid to late first round, especially when you consider, like, all of these wings from Villanova just end up being good pros, whether it's like a Josh Hart or a Mikhail Bridges or like a Ryan Archer-Diacono. If you're a guard or a wing and you play at Villanova, you're probably going to end up being a good pro.
I said this in January in a tweet where I was just like, I wish that there was a bet I could make because there's a 100% guarantee that Sadiq Bey is going to be the guy who goes in the 20s and ends up first team, all NBA rookie team. He's going to be the one that everyone asks, wow, how did he fall this far? Did everyone just try to buy potential? And it's like, it's all just playing out perfectly where he's going to go a little bit higher now. He'll go probably what, like 17 if you had like set an over under.
That's about where I would set it.
Right. And he's going to be that rookie the first month where he's just going to be the rookie the first month where everyone's like, this is your rookie of the year.
Yeah, and I'm hoping selfishly that he comes back. Like my life is watching college basketball, and I live right outside Philadelphia. And Sadiq Bey playing again for Villanova would be a great thing for me personally. But he would be an idiot if he came back to school.
There's no way he can come back, barring some crazy circumstance. Obviously.
Here's the wild thing: like I don't even think that hurts them that much. They still have Colin Gillespie coming back. Justin Moore is going to be awesome. Brian Antoine, we have not seen the best of him yet. They got a kid named Caleb Daniels, yep, who's transferring in from Tulane. And, you know, I've spoken with people that have seen him play throughout the years. You know, that I know people from that old Tulane staff, and they were like, the kid's a pro. He's going to be an NBA player, and he might be coming off the bench for Villanova in their backcourt. You mentioned Jermaine Samuels, who's so important to what they do. As weird as it sounds, I think Jeremiah Robinson Earl is the guy that determines whether or not this is the number one team in the country. 100%.
Because, listen, we know who Cosby Roundtree is. He's fine. I'm not a huge Cosby Roundtree fan. Robinson Earl just fits what Villanova wants to do so much better.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good rebounder. He can shoot it and space the floor a little bit. He's not Omari Spellman, but he can do some Omari Spellman-ish things when it comes to being able to pull people away from the basket while also being able to defend the rim and rebound the ball a little bit. So I think he's the big one. And I actually think that I might advise him to come back to school. And I think he's a guy, at least from a Villanova perspective, where all the uncertainty about and all the question marks about what's going on with this NBA draft process might actually help him. Because I feel like he's a guy that would do well in workouts because of his shooting ability and because of his size. But if you're not going to have workouts and this was the last time the NBA evaluators are going to be able to see you play in person, I don't know what he did during the season that would make me say, okay, yes, that guy should be like a top 40 draft pick. So he might be one of those guys where the uncertainty is, instead of just rolling a dice and going pro and seeing what happens, go back and play for the number one team in the country, average 15-10, and then go and be a first-round pick in 2021. That might be the smart move for him. Who do you have number two?
I have Kentucky at two.
Homer pick.
I mean, that's – God, you annoy – you. God, you're annoying me. You're Twitter right now. Because anytime I say something about Kentucky, who just – I happen to go to the school that is arguably the biggest name in college basketball.
But it's not my fault that I love Kentucky. They just happen to be the best all the time.
Listen, just it's on me that I visited the school in July with perfect weather. But I'm working under the assumption that I think Emmanuel quickly comes back. And he's a sneaky first-team All-American pick for next year.
Yeah, so I don't have him coming. I have him seventh right now. I don't have Emmanuel quickly coming back. And the only reason I don't have him coming back is because when it comes – like, I think he's, like, legitimately 50-50.
Yeah, no,
I think he's probably – I think he's a better NBA prospect than I think people realize. Like, I think people look at him as this guy that's, like, a – off ball, that's a shooter. But like, he played point guard through high school. So I don't know if he is going to be someone that can break down defenders at the NBA level, but I do think he has a little bit more in that game. And when it comes to being like if you're at Kentucky and you're 50-50, I'm just going to assume you're gone until you are coming back to school.
Right. So I think it's just a gun.
You have Maxie, Richards, and Hagen's gone, right?
Maxie, Richards, Hagen's gone, correct. It's not like it's mostly a gut feeling. Just reading stuff, it just sounds like quickly he's coming back. Again, it is 50-50, but I'm going to guess that he does come back. I really like this recruiting class they have coming in. And what you mentioned about quickly playing point guard, not only in high school, but he was their secondary ball handler this year too. In a way, that just takes so much pressure off of Devin Askew. So. I with quickly coming back, I think he's a sneaky first team All-American pick. I love that they have a ton of depth next year. It's just one of those kind of prototypical, like not old school, but early Cal Kentucky recruiting classes as opposed to the last few years. So and Dante Allen's another guy that's coming, I guess, back in a way. He missed all of this past season with an ACL injury. I really like that roster fit. We'll see what happens with, you know, potential transfer or anything like that. But if quickly comes back, they're for sure my number two team.
Yeah, I think I would bump them up a little bit. I don't think I would have them number two because I have Gonzaga number two. And I think that they're going to have
– I have Gonzaga three. Assuming,
yeah, so I'm assuming that Jalen Suggs is going to be there. But if you give me Jalen Suggs, Joel Ayayi, Corey Kispert, and then a three-headed monster up front of Drew Timmy, Philip Petrushev, assuming that he comes back to school, and Umar Ballo, that team is absolutely loaded.
Because
the one thing that it's basically the same team that they had this season, but they're adding a dynamic point guard in Jalen Suggs, which they didn't have this year, and they are adding Umar Ballo, who is a guy, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right, I'm probably not, but he just absolutely tore up, I think it was the U19s. Whatever FIBA event was this summer, I watched some of those games. He tore it up, and everything that I've heard about like what he's been doing in practice is that he's been awesome. So that's a huge talented front line with a dynamic point guard, and we already have Joel Ayayi and Corey Kispert, and we know how good those guys are.
Are you worried about them defensively at all?
I'm always worried about them defensively.
But I'm saying more than normal because you do lose. Like Ryan Woolridge was – what, their best guard defender this year?
Yeah, he was really good. And Killian Tilly was a guy that let them match up with other people.
Right.
But at a point, it's just kind of like, okay, you know, you might be able to take advantage of Drew Timmy a little bit, or maybe you'll be able to take advantage of Philip Petrushev a little bit in terms of what he can do defensively. But they're going to overpower you. They're going to kick your ass in the paint.
Oh, that's all fair.
I think it's going to end up being like one of those teams where they end up being like number one nationally in offensive efficiency, and they rank like 40th in defensive efficiency. But that is like that's good enough for me to go out and win a national title.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I have them at three, so I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. I'm just playing devil's advocate as you
No, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah, I would have him at number two no matter what. For me, I would probably, like, assuming Quickly comes back for that Kentucky team, I'd have them, like, right around, probably fifth above. So my top five is this. Obviously, Villanova, Gonzaga. I have Baylor third. I have Creighton fourth, and I have Virginia fifth right now.
Okay, so do you want my top five? And then I have a question for you.
Okay, yes. I want your top five, and I want your question.
My top five is Villanova one, Kentucky two, Gonzaga three, Creighton four, Baylor five. My question for you is, because I'm bringing up some now because we're talking about Quickly and everything, who is the most important decision to come back that could really, I guess, turn a team – when you're looking at top 10 into a national title contender or anything like that, who do you think is, from a college basketball standpoint only, the single most important decision?
There's a couple of them that I've written down. I think the most important one for me is probably Malachi Flynn.
Okay. I don't disagree with that one.
So I think that he is a guy that could be a second round pick if he decided to leave. I don't know if he is going to end up going pro, but with him back and with Matt Mitchell and with Jordan Shackle, and Nathan Mensah coming back, assuming that he ends up being healthy, I think that team is good enough to be a top 10 team once again. The other guy that I had on the list, I think Luka Garza is incredibly influential in terms of what next season is going to be. As good as, like, Iowa's got a ton of guards and a ton of wins. Like, even if they don't get Jordan Bohannon back, like, I think they might actually be better off without, like, if your choice is Jordan Bohannon at like 75% with this hip issue, or Joe Toussaint as a sophomore as like the guy that can be a breakout star. Give me Joe Toussaint. Like CJ Frederick is back. Joe Wieskamp is back. Connor McCaffrey is going to be back. They're going to get Jack Nunge back. But all of it kind of hinges on whether or not you have Luka Garza anchoring things. So for me, I think those are probably the two most important ones, along with Jeremiah Robinson Earl.
Okay. Yeah, I was
I'm sorry. I missed another one of the obvious ones. Xavier Tillman coming back.
Okay. Yeah.
Because right now, my number six team in the country is Michigan State, but that is with Xavier Tillman back.
Yeah, I have them at 18.
Do you have Tillman coming back?
Yeah. It's just I still like I like Tillman. I just and I think they're going to be fine. I'll probably be wrong if I'm too low on them, but. Just Cassius Winston was so important, man.
He was. But I think the big thing for me is that I expect Rocket Watts and Gabe Brown and Malik Hall and Marcus Bingham all to take a significant step forward next season.
Right. That's and why I also start them at 18 and then move my way up as the season goes on. Obviously.
Yeah, and then I also think that Joey Hauser getting eligible will be huge for them at the four. But, like, none of it matters if Xavier Tillman is not there. Because I think Xavier Tillman is, to them, like, what Udoka Azubuike was to Kansas. Like, the guy, he's a little bit unheralded. And he's never going to get all the credit that he deserves for what he can do. But, like, he is as influential to that defense, to that offense, to everything they do as anybody else on that roster.
Yeah, it'd also just be weird to have, like, a Hauser Malik Hall starting front court.
Yeah, like that just wouldn't work. It would be Hauser and like Marcus Bingham, but even that, like, is kind of like if Xavier Tillman's not there, I'll probably have Michigan State somewhere in the 20s. So real quick for Baylor, they basically bring everybody except Freddie Gillespie back, Devontae Bandu off the bench, but they add Adam Flagler, which would transfer coming in. They have Matthew Mayer coming back, so I'm not necessarily all that worried about Bandu, assuming Jared Butler returns to school. And I have them third, but it all kind of depends. Like, if Tristan Clark is not healthy, then I'll probably have them drop kind of far. Creighton, I honestly think I might be a little bit low on them at four. I'm just worried about the five situation. But assuming they get back Zagorowski, Tyshawn Alexander, Mitchell Ballack, Damian Jefferson, and Denzel Mahoney, like, I love that lineup so much. I'm always going to have a blind spot on Creighton because I love the offense they run. I love the way that Greg McDermott plays. I love the fact that they just shoot threes with reckless abandon. I saw a stat today that Mitchell Ballack attempted 13 threes from beyond 30 feet this season, which was like, and I think the rest of the Big East as a whole was like 22.
That's amazing. I feel like Mitchell Ballack's a big Rob Dowster player.
Yes, I love him so much. Because one, he's got a beard. Two, he shoots 30-footers with no regard for human life. How do you not love that guy? The other problem is he's a little too in shape.
Yeah. Like,
you gotta put on a couple LBs, my guy.
I love Tyshawn Alexander. I sneaky was like, can I put him onto like a third team All-American this year? Strictly because he's the one guy that can defend on that team. Like, I love watching him play defense against Miles Powell. He can obviously score. I love Tyshawn Alexander's game. And I'm the same way with you. I love this Creighton team. I'm always a sucker for Creighton.
It's so funny, too, because, like, Tyshawn Alexander is probably the best NBA prospect in that backcourt. Mitchell Ballack is the guy – or I'm sorry, Marcus Zagorowski is probably, like, the quarterback of that team and the guy that, like, makes everything run and kind of the – it feels weird calling him a glue guy, but he's the guy – like, him being there makes everything else fit together the way it's supposed to fit together. But if you talk to coaches, like, Mitchell Ballack will be one of the things that you have to worry about on the scouting report because of how well he's able to run off screens and how well Greg McDermott is able to take advantage of his shooting ability. And like, they're going to be worried about like, okay, so what are we going to do when he comes off of this screen and they use him in this action and how are we going to guard this? So all three of those guys together in tandem are just, they're just such a nightmare. And I really hope they come back for another year because I want to see Creighton make a run. Like Creighton needs to, we need Creighton in a Final Four.
You know, like, we need Creighton, and we need, like, the old-school Iowa State teams in a Final Four. Those are I was a sucker for. Like, Monty Morris was my guy. Put those two teams just in a Final Four together, please, because they both – we need to watch that happen.
Yeah. All right. So, Virginia, there's no way they can be as bad offensively this year as they were last year. They get Sam Hauser eligible at the four, who's going to open some things up. And I just refuse to believe that any Tony Bennett team is not going to be great defensively. So you give me Kihei Clark, Casey Morsell, Tomas Walden-Tensei, Sam Hauser, Jay Huff with a couple of the talented youngsters that they do have. I think that is a top 5 to 8 team. Where do you stand on – here's the teams that I have questions on. Where do you stand on Kansas? Where do you stand on Duke?
I have Kansas at 6, and I kind of hate it. Like, I feel like I'm way too high on them. But at the same time,
I mean, you're not too high on them. The big question is,
they have a point guard.
Yeah, they got the kid DeJuan Harris that is going to come off the bench, and they're probably going to. I think like Bill Self even said this in a press conference. I was talking with Jesse Newell today, and he said that Bill Self said it at the end of the year. So I'm just going to trust Jesse when he says that. But I think that Jesse Newell is the beat writer for the Kansas City Star. For people that don't know. But I think Marcus Garrett can be good enough at the point for them.
Can't picture Marcus Garrett. And I like Marcus Garrett. I just can't close my eyes and picture Marcus Garrett like the lead guard for a national title.
I don't know if I would pick them to be like a national title contender.
But I kind of think they are.
Fair. But I do think that you can say that a team can be really, really good and is better than all of these other teams, but may not be able to compete with the elite teams in college basketball without them. And I think that's kind of what like the back end – for me, that's what the back end of the top 10 is. So I have them at 8. They just have a ton of wings. I think David McCormick is going to be able to step in and to that Udoka Azubuike role and not fill it, but be able to do a good enough job where we say, okay, maybe he wasn't that bad. And then Duke, like I have them at 12. Where do you have them?
I have them at 12 as well.
I'm really looking forward to seeing like a perimeter attack that is going to include like Wendell Moore and Jalen Johnson and DJ Stewart. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But the big thing is like they have no front court depth. They're all over like a lot of these big some of the grad transfers that are big guys. Because basically, like the only big guy that they have is Mark Williams, who's going to be a freshman. Like I honestly, like he's a late bloomer. I really don't know all that much about him. I don't think I've ever seen him play.
What do you think of their recruiting class? Because they have obviously it's another loaded recruiting class, but it varies year by year, right? Like we talked about with Memphis coming into this year, under the assumption we had James Wiseman, Precious Achiuwa, and then a lot of like 3-4 year program guys, 4 stars. That's how they got that number one ranking. What do you make of this Duke, like? Recruiting class that they're going to rely a ton on.
Yeah, you know, I think that it is. I don't think there are as many like one and done guys. I do think that DJ Stewart is going to be able to step in and kind of do what he does because I feel like guys that come in as scorers it's a little easier to like come in and just be able to score.
Yeah, you know how to score.
He's going to have problems doing other things, but like he's going to be able to get some buckets, and that's kind of what he's going to be asked to do. I love Jalen Johnson. I think Jalen Johnson is going to be terrific. Kind of, it's going to be a throwback to where they kind of play like a little bit of that small ball lineup. You know, he's like 6'8" and probably 220, but like he's a lefty that wants to play in the perimeter. He's a terrific passer. So I think that he's going to, like, his ability to pass is going to take some of the pressure off Jeremy Roach at the point, because he's another one of these like grab and go fours.
Right.
He's not like, I'm not going to even mention Zion Williamson because he's not like that, but he is. There's a little, I hesitate to say Ben Simmons because of like the connotation of how good he can be. But in terms of, like, I don't think that he is the same level as a prospect or a player, but stylistically, like you watch him play, you're going to see some Ben Simmons, and that's what you're going to think of. So I love Jalen Johnson.
Yeah. It's just weird because I felt like Duke for the majority of the time, there was always like a Quinn Cook or somebody like that. Grayson Allen, a guy that's been around for a few years. This year coming back,
Wendell Moore, baby.
Sure, go ahead. I guess like Jordan Goldwire.
Yeah, no, I think Wendell Moore is going to have a really big sophomore year. And Jordan, yes, the answer is, as wild as it sounds, like the guy that they took as part of a package deal to get, well, I don't know if it was even a package deal, but the guy, like the AAU teammate of Alex O'Connell, is the guy that's still there. Everybody laughed when Jordan Goldwire committed to Duke over Eastern Kentucky. And now Alex O'Connell's gone. Graduating.
I got an over-under bet for you.
Okay.
How many games into the season will it take for like everybody on Twitter to start saying, when will Joey Baker play more?
I don't know, like 3 games in. It always happens 3 games in.
Because it's been 2 years in a row.
Yeah. All right. A couple more I want to talk about. Where do you have Tennessee?
Tennessee, I have at 15.
Yeah, I have them at 14.
And it's just, I think they're going to be fine, but I have some serious questions. But they are just kind of like this perfect middle top 25 team, right? Like, can you really win where like John Fulkerson might be your best player?
I think you can, because like he was so awesome. It doesn't make any sense. He's John Fulkerson, but he was awesome late in the year. And two, like, I know two. I low key think Eves Pons is their best player.
Yeah, I mean Eves Pons is just so dynamic with what he can do, especially defensively, and he's just such a game changer on that side of the ball.
But that staff will tell you he's the best defensive player they've ever seen at the college level. Michael Schwartz will understand how to like make that work defensively with Eves Pons. Like he'll find a way to make it work, and like they're so well coached. And I really do think that like Rick Barnes has been rejuvenated going to Tennessee. My big question with them is like, do we trust Santiago?
That's Scobie exactly what I was just about to say.
Like, I kind of do.
He wasn't turnover prone, and I'm curious to see how he adapts to, I guess, year two of major college basketball.
Well, explain why it's more important for him.
Oh, you mean coming from overseas?
Well, yeah, because he came from – like, he got there on a Saturday
in
the middle of January and then was starting on that Tuesday
because
he got there right after Lamont Turner called it a season.
Yeah.
I do think there's two things that kind of give me a little bit of hope. I think Josiah Jordan-James has a little bit of playmaker in him. And I think that he'll be able to handle a little bit of that load. And I also think that having Keon Johnson there as a guy that can just kind of be like a driver. Keon Johnson's a freshman who's the real deal. And I think that having him kind of as a driver will take a little bit of that pressure off as well. I love the makeup of this team. And I cannot wait for the lineups when they play Eves Pons at the 5 and 4 guards around him. They're going to be so much fun to watch when they do that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they start the year too. I feel like this is a team that has to get off to a good start. If they're struggling, if they're like 8-5, I'd be worried about them from a mental standpoint.
All right, so let me ask you this. Who do you think you're higher on than everybody else, and who do you think you're lower on than everybody else?
I think I might be the highest on Houston out of than anybody else.
Where do you have them?
9.
Wow. All right, give me the logic. Talk me through it.
I'm starting to get to the point where it's just like, I think we have to trust Kelvin Sampson at all times now. I also don't think they really lose anything from this year's team. I know Chris Harris is gone. I know we're waiting on Dejan Giroux, but I think Quentin Grimes is going to be kind of that perfect like AAC player. I like the makeup. It seems like Kelvin Sampson's adapting every year with this Houston team. They return just a ton. They were top 15 on KenPom this past year. I'll just buy into them. I'll probably be wrong, but I feel like they're going to be a top 15 team all year.
No, I don't think you're going to be wrong. I have them at 19, and I'm looking at it, and I just kind of feel like I'm too low. It's kind of hard for me to sit here and say, like, okay, I'm going to buy into a Houston team when their best player is – like, I refuse to say Quentin Grimes is going to be their best player. I just won't do it. And I kind of low-key think that Dejan Giroux won't be coming back, and I don't think that that will be a bad thing for the program. But, like, maybe – is Caleb Mills going to be their best player?
I mean, I still kind of trust Grimes. I know you don't, but regardless, like, that's a pretty good 1-2 combo, especially in the AAC.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to be good. So who are you lower on than everybody else?
So I quickly looked through your rankings. I don't have UNC ranked.
You don't?
No.
Tell me why.
They don't have good players. And they're going to rely on freshmen, and we'll see. Like, freshmen have a 50-50 track record with Roy Williams and figuring it out year one. I know this is one of the, you know, a different recruiting class for Roy and everything like that. But, like, I don't know. Garrison Brooks is fine. You're telling me you still trust Leaky Black, Andrew Playtech? Can Anthony Harris stay healthy?
Well, no, I absolutely do not. That's why I have them at 15. Here's the thing. Like, I think that they're going to have the best front line in college basketball.
Sure, maybe.
Garrison Brooks, Armando Baycott, Walker Kessler, and Dayron Sharpe. Like, they are just going to have so many big guys that are just going to be able to crash the glass, pound the glass, control the paint. I also think that Caleb Love, I expect him to be perfect for that fit for that program. Like I don't think that he's going to have the same kind of year that Kobe White did. Like, I'm not going to sit here and predict that he goes from being a top 25 recruit to a top 7 pick in the NBA draft. But I do think that he is kind of in, like, that same mold, and I do think he's going to be really good for them. But, I mean, look, their wings, the guys that I have starting for them right now, are Anthony Harris, who played 5 games as a freshman as a top 75 recruit, and Leaky Black. Now, if both of them can be healthy, then maybe that'll work out for them a little bit. But let's just put it like this. If they had wings that I could trust, if they, like, let's say that you put, like, Justin Jackson on this team, then I think that they're a top 5 team. Just because of how good their front line is, how well Roy Williams is able to play when he has really good front lines, because I trust Caleb Love. But there's just, I don't know. Their wings are terrible. But how awesome is it going to be that we're going to have a team that has a Caleb Love, a Puff Johnson, and a Leaky Black?
I know. But you know who they are? They are a higher ceiling West Virginia. Like, that's what that team reminds me of.
They actually run offense.
But they're going to be so reliant next year on just offensive rebounds and hoping a guard figures it out.
That's actually true. That's a really good point.
North Carolina
really is going to be West Virginia next year.
But I have West Virginia ranked 22nd. So they're just like – but I think North Carolina has a higher ceiling than West Virginia. But their makeup's pretty much the same. Just North Carolina has probably better individual players.
All right. So I think that I'm going to be higher than everybody on Texas Tech.
I have them at 8. Where do you have them?
I have them at 9.
So I'm 1-0.
Well, I think they're going to be awesome.
They're so good.
Yeah, so I think that they're built better this, like, to play for next season than they were for this season. I think Kyler Edwards is kind of the guy that they've been waiting to take a leap, and I think that him as a junior is going to be that guy. I think, assuming that Davide Moretti comes back, but I'm assuming that Jamias Ramsey is probably going to end up being gone. I think that he just makes sense as a pro. But I think they plan for it. You know, I expect Namari Burnett to be able to step in and have a big contribution right away. I think Terrence Shannon is a guy that can take a pretty significant leap as a sophomore. I think Joel I'm going to try to pronounce this. Ntamwe is a guy that can kind of step in at the five. Now, the big thing for me, there's two big question marks that I have is, do they have a playmaker on that roster? You know, the thing about, we all talked about Jarrett Culver the year they made it to the national title game. Well, the guy that was the point guard for that team was Matt Mooney, who ended up playing in the NBA, like a great on-ball defender that is now, like, was playing in the NBA when the NBA got shut down. I don't know if they have a guy to replace that. And the year that they made the Elite Eight, the year before that, they had Keenan Evans playing alongside Jarrett Culver. So I don't know if they have that lead guard. I want to think that Kyler Edwards is going to be that guy. I don't know if he is going to be that guy. And they don't have, like, they don't have a Tariq Owens. Tariq Owens was so underrated and so important to what they did defensively because of the way that he could switch, because of the way that he could defend the rim and what he provided for them as like a rim runner and a lob presence in the paint. So I think that not having a guy like that, Joel Ntamwe can do some good things, but he's basically like, from what I can tell, basically TJ Holyfield, just maybe more talented.
Right. I have a Big 12 team that I'm higher on than probably everyone else. They are 16th. Can you guess what Big 12 team I am higher on?
The Texas Longhorns.
Incorrect.
No, they're not.
The Oklahoma Sooners.
I can see it. I can dig it.
I know Doolittle's gone. I know Doolittle was great, but they returned pretty much everybody else. They have a top 25 recruiting class coming in.
You just love Austin Reeves. That's all it is.
I'm here for Austin Reeves, like, getting reprimanded by the Big 12 after every game for just screaming at the camera. and it's also Brady Manick. Brady Manick's been in college. He's already, like, the way too early favorite captain for my how the hell are they still in college team for next year.
Yeah, he really has been there forever. He might have played with Buddy.
He might have. Like, he's been around forever.
I'm not going to pretend that he didn't. The other team that I think I'm higher on than everybody else is probably Louisville. I'm just buying into this idea that if you give me David Johnson, assuming Jay Scrub makes it to campus, give me David Johnson, Jay Scrub, Samuel Williamson, Malik Williams, and Chris Mack.
Yeah,
I'm good, man. Let's roll. I'm good. I'm good with that group. So I don't really have anything else to add.
I have a team ranked that you don't, and it is your UConn Huskies.
Yeah, I have them as one of the five that missed the cut. I'm not 100% buying into that just yet because I don't want to I'm trying to limit expectations on it because I've bought in too hard in the past, so I'm trying to not buy in. Talk myself out of it. So let's talk a little bit about Kansas and this whole raising the banner conversation for a national title. I think my buddy, our buddy Myron Metcalf over at ESPN really wants this to happen. I hate this idea.
It took me so much time to get into a Twitter argument with them over it.
I don't want to argue with anybody on Twitter.
No,
like, I don't.
But I will.
I love Myron. I love Myron.
Yeah, Myron's great.
A great dude. Great. But like his opinion on this Kansas raising the banner thing is the worst thing on the planet.
First things first. Here's number one: why Kansas shouldn't raise banner. UCF did this for football. UCF, a mid-major, and they got mocked relentlessly. You are Kansas. You are one of the three, four biggest names in college basketball, and you're going to raise a fake banner? You know what? Do it, just because I'm here for the mocking. I'm here for the internet trolling.
No, don't do it. You're Kansas. Don't do it. Have some self-respect.
Right. Like, it's not 1938 where you can claim, like, a Helms trophy.
So the two things that I'll say to it is this. One, when in 1994, that was the year the baseball strike was, right?
Yes. Montreal Expo.
In 1994, the baseball season got canceled, like, two-thirds of the way through. And there was no World Series. And nobody is out here trying to claim that anybody won that World Series title. You know why? The way that you determine a champion in Major League Baseball is to play the Major League Baseball playoffs, play the Division Series, then you play the ALCS, and then you play the World Series. And whoever ends up winning the World Series is the team that wins the Major League Baseball title. That's how you do it. Now, in in European soccer, right? Like, if we're going to talk about the Premier League, Liverpool is up like 24 points or something like that with 9 games left. There's no way anyone's going to catch them. And if you want to tell me that you want to give Liverpool the Premier League title because they have the most points right now, and it's almost mathematically impossible for anybody to catch them, I'm fine with that, because the way that you determine a Premier League champion and the way that you determine the Premier League title is whoever has the most points at the end of their 38-game season. And there's almost no way that anyone can catch them. And like, I hate Liverpool. I hate Liverpool fans. I'm a Tottenham fan. They beat Liverpool beat Tottenham in the final of the Champions League last year on a bullshit handball call. I hate them. I don't want them to win a Premier League title, because I don't want to hear anything from Liverpool fans. They are the most annoying fan base this side of your University of Kentucky Wildcats. That said, that if you want to give them the title, like, I'm fine with it, because it's the most points. They were going to win it. They were going to have a historic season. Give it to them. I'm fine with that, because the way that you determine a Premier League title is most points at the end of the season. The way that you determine an NCAA tournament, or the way that you determine a college basketball national champion, is the NCAA tournament. Now, the thing about the NCAA tournament is that it is the absolute worst way to determine who the best team in college basketball is, right? But it's the absolute best way to determine a champion. And I've said this over and over and over again. That's what makes this sport so much fun, is that literally anybody can win it. Like, a UConn team that has Shabazz Napier and Ryan Boatwright and DeAndre Daniels can go out and win a national title. Loyola Chicago can play in the Final Four, right? Northern Iowa can knock off Kansas, the best team in college basketball. So the reason why you can't give Kansas his national title is because, like, for exactly what happened in 2010 when they got Ali Farouk-Manesh. Because they were the best team in college basketball that year. You cannot do this. And if Kansas raises this title, like, credit to Bill Self, because Bill Self, like, tried to downplay it, right? Like, he was basically like, we don't do this. This is not how we do it. This is not our sport. What makes our sport great is that the best team doesn't always win the title.
That's what I was going to say. So, in the last, if anything, Kansas isn't going to win the title this year, because in the last decade, 2 number one overall seeds have won a NCAA title. 3 KenPom ones, number one overall teams going into the tournament, have won a title. History says Kansas ain't winning the title.
Yeah, that's why you can't give it to them. Like, you cannot. Right. No, please don't raise this banner.
And, like, this goes for everybody. The Florida Senate, who passed a bill, or, like, passed a thing declaring Florida State national champs that first Sunday, like, or Saturday. No. Anybody declaring themselves national champions, I'm just going to mock you relentlessly.
Well, I mean, like, that's the other thing. Like, the argument that people make is like, oh, college basketball or college football did this for so many years. Yeah, like, why wouldn't they care about it? We made fun of it, and we spent years and years and years and so many words and wrote so many columns and had books written about how stupid it is that we don't have a playoff in college football.
College football ties. You could win a national title on a tie.
Don't do it. Please, don't do it. Do not be those guys.
I'm glad that I saw a lot of Kansas fans. Like, I wrote a blog on it. Obviously, Myron had his tweet. Kerry Parrish had a column. I saw a lot of Kansas fans being like, yeah, we don't want any part of this match, like, fake national title.
No, like, look, you guys would have been the favorite. I had a nice little 12-1 futures bet on you winning the national. Like, I wanted Kansas to win. I was all in on them winning. I've been calling them the best team for, like, 2 months. I love Udoka Azubuike. That's my guy.
Can they vacate a fake title?
they might have had to. Like, that's the worst part about this, is it might be the last time that Kansas has a chance to win a title for like 10 years.
What if they put up a fake title and the NCAA said they can't do it, but Kansas says we'll take it down, we'll take down our banners, and the NCAA approves it?
Oh man, I don't even want to think about all those hypotheticals. Let's talk about fat guys. You want to talk about fat guys?
Absolutely, because we're all coming out of this quarantine fat.
So, yo, I'm putting on so much weight; it's horrible. I tried to. How about this, Reeks? I tried to, like, I did a workout the other day. Like, I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna start working out again, and I'll just do it in my basement. I'm gonna have people that are actually in shape send me all this. Like, I'm not in terrible shape. Like, as it is. Like, I could probably go out and run 5 miles right now at probably somewhere around like 8-minute pace. So I'm not in terrible shape at all. But I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try to do one of these like crazy workouts. And I did something called the all 22 or something like that, which was, so you run a half a mile and then you do 20 jump lunges and 2 push-ups and 18 jump lunges and 4 push-ups all the way down to 2 jump lunges and 20 push-ups.
Yeah.
Then you run another half mile and then you do the same thing with like 20 squat jumps and then, 2 push-ups all the way down to 2 squat jumps and 20 push-ups and run another half mile. The worst decision I've ever made in my life. I cannot move. I did this 48 hours ago. I can't make it up and down the stairs.
You got your exercise in during the quarantine now. You did your one exercise. You're good.
It was the dumbest thing I've ever, like, why would I like go out and try to do like plyometric shit? When I had like, I had just for 10 straight days, like I was sitting on a couch or sitting on a chair, like doing nothing. Yep. I'm like, you know what? Let me go out and do some plyometrics. It's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever done. What was I thinking? Why would I do that?
You got to ease yourself in.
I should have just eased myself in, man. But so on Sunday, one of the times when I actually was just sitting on the couch, I was watching the replay of the 2008 national title game when Sherron Collins was playing. And I kind of got it in my head, like the all fat guy starting five, because mm-hmm. I thought that he was one of the greatest fat guy basketball players that we have ever seen. So I wanted to put together with you the all fat guy team of the 2000s. It doesn't have to be the 2000s. It can be whatever. But we have to set some ground rules on what determines like a fat guy that makes him eligible for this team. So what do you got for me?
You have to have the fat guy mentality. And by that, I mean, maybe you wear a baggy t-shirt underneath your jersey. Maybe you wore the shorts a little too long in the 2000s. But it's also the way you play the game. You know, it's hard to describe, but if you played hoops, you know the fat guy mentality, and you need that mentality.
Yeah, shoot a lot of deep threes.
Or just like be incredibly sweaty.
Yeah, you got to be the sweatiest guy on the roster. There has to have been at least 3 in-depth, 3,000-word magazine-length features written about how much weight you lost. When they talk about you on the broadcast, they have to mention something about the, like, either your dietitian.
His freshman year.
Yeah, minimum 40 pounds lost at some point during his career that they have to talk about in every single broadcast. They have to mention the guy in the weight trainer in the strength room.
Yep.
And the change of diet. You have to talk about what they cut out of their diet.
Yep. And it's like, it's always something like, when he was in high school, he ate 13 Hot Pockets a day and 42 packets of Fruit Gushers. When he came here, he went on a strict, like, pasta diet or whatever.
It's nothing but lean meats and vegetables.
Yep.
No olive oil anymore.
So that's the thing. There has to be a debate about just how fat you are. And I'm not talking to Zion, is he fat or is he muscular? There needs to be the debate of, is he like too fat to play basketball, or is he just like the perfect baby fat kind of guy?
Yeah, that's the other thing. They have to refer to you about the baby fat.
Yep, for sure.
All right, so
there's a who? There's one lock on the all fat team.
Who?
Khalid Elamine.
It's got to be, and I love that you said that. By the way,
he is a lock. Like, he is the quintessential fat guard from the 2000s. And I, like, Khalid Elamine was awesome.
he was legit my favorite basketball player, like, throughout my high school years. Like, when they won the national title, like, I was entering my freshman year. It was my eighth grade year when they won the title. So I went into my freshman year when Khalid Elamine was a senior in college, and like, he was like legitimately my favorite basketball player. And one of the coolest things was, the first year that I won, that I ever covered the Final Four, was the year that Kemba Walker led UConn to that national title. Excuse me for burping. I've been drinking beer over here. It was 2011 when Kemba Walker went out and they won the national title. And I got to interview Khalid Elamine on the court. And I remember I said to him, I was like, just so you know, like, 14-year-old me, like, would never believe that this would actually happen. Yeah. And like, he's legitimately, he's shorter than you.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm 5'9". Like, I'm not tall.
Yeah, you're not tall. Like, he's shorter than you. And but he's also, like, legitimate. He's also built like you these days, which is not a good thing.
I know. But he was built like me when he was 19.
Yeah, but he's, like, legitimately, like, the nicest person in the world. He's so friendly, and he's got this big goofy smile, like the typical fat guy. How could you not love Khalid Elmi?
And he went from no t-shirt as a freshman to the extremely baggy t-shirt.
Yes, he basically wore long sleeves. Right. He was wearing the 5X videos that they got from like a Lil Jon music video.
So he's a lock. He has to be on there.
He has to be on there. So the other lock for me, and there's no debate, is Chris Jenkins.
Yeah, he's like the clutch. You're running the last play with him.
Yeah, well, look, he is like he was legitimately like 6'5", 260 pounds, playing Division I Big East college basketball, hit a game-winning three at the buzzer to win the national title, and like spent the next year doing nothing but firing up 30-footers. There is absolutely no planet where Chris Jenkins is not first-team all-fat guy college basketball.
Yeah, he's on there. Is Sharon Collins on there? Because he's a great fat guy.
I think that he is. But like people push back on me when I put him as one of my first five starting five because they're like, yeah, when he played, he was like 6 foot, 200 pounds, just shredded. Like, have you seen him now?
Yeah, he's like he wants my look now.
Yeah, he had the fat guy mentality.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he was a fat guy through and through. But he was also from – what made him tough is he was from Chicago. Like, if he was from Wichita, no one's calling him shredded. Everyone calls him shredded because he was from Chicago. So if he had the same look from Wichita, that's baby fat Sharon Collins.
Yeah. So I think that's our, like, that's our perimeter right there. Khalid Elmi, Sharon Collins, and Chris Jenkins. Now, the front court is where things get real interesting.
There's a lot of fat guys.
Yeah, does Zion Williamson count for this team?
No, because the debate with Zion was always, is he fat or is he muscular? The debate has to be, is he going to lose baby fat? And he'll still be chunky. So I don't think Zion can be on the all-fat team.
But I don't understand that because like everyone talks about, is he too fat? Does he have too much weight? But I'm fine with it because like he's too good anyways. Like
you
he's
can't like, dunk he's like that if you're a true fat guy.
Yeah, like he dunks on it. He's not a land warrior. Like if you're a big guy on this team, we need land warriors.
You have to be described as a space eater. He was never described as a
Yeah, you really have to be able to be a space eater. Oh man. So who's your starter?
Because
I think that there's no questions asked. We have to have Big Baby Davis on that team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like he was known for being a fat guy.
Well, yes, and he would dance. Do you remember when he did the Dougie at the?
Yep.
No, he did the Harlem Shake at the McDonald's All American yep. game.
Yeah, he's got to be on there.
He has to be on there.
It's too far back. Otherwise, Tractor Trailer, Rodney Rogers would be on there, but that's too far back.
Yeah, we can't have them on there.
Trying to think of other like who would be like a true fat big guy that's also like. The best one out of them all. Because, like,
there's a bunch.
Somebody like Kennedy Meeks, but he's not good enough to be there.
No, he's not good enough. There's too many, like, there's a high standard that you have to reach when it comes to the fat guys in the front court. Some names for you. How about Big Country Bryant Reeves?
Yeah, a little too far back.
How about Renardo Sidney?
Sidney, yeah, but he's definitely not good enough. I mean, he was.
How about BJ Anya?
BJ Anya is a great one.
How about Matt Stainbrook?
Ooh, Stainbrook.
I don't know if he was good enough. He wouldn't make first team for me. He wasn't good enough.
Did I ever tell you I was at a beer fest with him once? Or like at the same beer fest with him and we were at the same table getting a drink. And he just looks at me, just gives me like a what's up and just downs a beer right in front of me. I was like, oh, that went down very fast. He was like, yeah, well, you know, like I'm big. And I was like, yeah, you are. He just orders another one.
Of course you are. Pierre Niles. What was – he put the hyphen in. Is it Pierre Henderson Niles?
I think so.
How about Josh Smith? Remember him? That one just feels mean, though.
Yeah, it does feel mean. Do you remember
Shemek Eric Karnowski?
Who'd you say? Yeah.
Shemek Karnowski.
Yep. Do you remember Eric Williams from the 05 weight team?
Yeah, he was fat. How about Dexter Pittman?
Dexter Pittman was fat.
From Texas?
Yeah.
DeJuan Coleman from Syracuse?
Yeah.
Juan Blair at Pitt.
At just every Pitt player ever.
Luke Herangode from Notre Dame.
Slash Jack Cooley.
Slash Jack Cooley. Craig Smith from BC.
Yeah.
Okay. These are all the guys that I have on the list, by the way.
What about Caleb Swanigan?
Caleb Swanigan. I think that he has to be on the in consideration list, but that's not who I would have as my fat guy starting on that team.
Who do you have?
Omar Samhan. It's not Omar Samhan, but Omar Samhan. I remember during the tournament, the Samhan from St. Mary's. For people that don't know, he was a team that upset, I think it was
Villanova.
Yeah, they upset Villanova in the second round of the 2010 tournament.
Yes. Yeah.
But he had an interview after the Sweet 16 where they were like, how did you lose so much weight? And he was like, I stopped dipping my pizza in ranch and now I just eat the pizza regular.
Yeah, no, you have that quote.
Oh, man. I was like, I love this man.
Yeah,
absolutely love this man.
You have that quote, you're on the team. Like, that's our five.
No, that's not who I would start. I would start Jared Sullinger.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely the best college player.
Because he was legitimately fat. It was part of the reason he didn't make the NCAA tournament. He was so fat he had a bad back. That puts you on that team, right?
And you have it at that young age. Like we can get that now. And everyone's like, yeah, that's understandable. You have that when you're like a college athlete at 19.
Fat with a bad back and an All-American. He's got to be on the team. Like, he has to be on the first team. There's no argument there.
Yeah. So it's Sullinger, Jenkins, Colin,
Big Baby,
and
Khalid Elamine,
with Khalid Elamine being the captain.
Yes, Khalid Elamine has to be the captain.
Okay, who's the coach?
I mean, is there even a question?
Yes, because I think there's two. Who do you have?
It's Rick Majerus.
That's okay. That was one of my two.
There's no question. Like, how are we even having this conversation?
Well, it was him or Huggy.
Yeah, but like Huggy's just a big dude. Like, Rick Majerus is a legitimate fat guy.
So we have Majerus as our head coach.
There are so many great Rick Majerus stories out there.
That
he'll, like, in the locker room, just walk around naked eating a full pizza. I had a buddy of mine that grew up in Utah during the when he was the head coach at Utah, and he went to like the Rick Majerus basketball camp. And he said that at one point, like during one of his speeches, like he made a joke or something, and he was laughing. And Rick Majerus just walked over, and while he was sitting there laughing with his friend, just sat on him and finished his whole speech while he was sitting on this kid who was 12 years old at the time because he wouldn't stop talking. Can you imagine being 12 years old, sitting there and having a fat, sweaty, RIP Rick Majerus just sitting on you, finishing his speech in front of like 300 kids at a basketball camp?
Yeah, that's tough to come back from.
That's tough to come back from. And Rick Majerus 100% would win a national title with a team that had Khalid Elamine, Sharon Collins, Chris Jenkins, Jared Sullinger, and Big Baby Davis.
And just they would crush so much pizza and heavy beer.
Well, you know what he would do? He'd say, if we win tonight, then we're all going to get a large pizza to ourselves.
Yeah.
Extra pepperoni.
Extra pepperoni.
All right. We got to keep this moving because we're already at an hour and we're already over what we're supposed to be doing.
People got nothing else going on.
You put out a list today of the top characters in The Office. We need to talk about this because I have some serious issues with the way this list played out. So, first of all, bring it up. Talk me through your top five. Explain to me how you reached the point that you reached and why you decided that this was the list that you were going to fuck up royally more than any other list that you've ever done.
So I'm sorry. I've seen everybody across every platform start ranking things. So I said, at 4 o'clock during this quarantine every day, I'm going to rank things. Use hashtag Reeves Rank. Send me a topic and I'll come up with a ranking. Pick one a day. Our buddy Sam Dezzini sent me the five of Office characters. I have honorable mention, Daryl, the first two seasons of Andy, and Kelly. At five, I have Dwight. At four, Ryan. Three, Creed. Two, Kevin Malone. One, Michael Scott. I don't think you can argue Michael just because of how important he is to the show. And like, he's by far the most like cringy of the guy or of the characters, but you got to have him there. Kevin and Creed, perfect bit characters. I laugh all the time. still when I watch him, like Kevin, like we just talked about fat guys. He's the perfect fat guy on television. Ryan, the more I rewatch it, the more I laugh at Ryan's like one-liners. And there's just scenes where like they're on the double date with Pam and the cartoonist, and Kelly's just shoveling food into his mouth as he looks miserable. I laugh at Ryan way more than I care than I ever thought. And then Dwight at five, because again, he's just so important to the show. So what?
I don't understand how you don't have Jim listed anywhere on that list.
So I wanted to put a caveat. I like Jim whenever he's not around Pam.
So you're one of those guys that doesn't want your friends to get girlfriends, huh?
Well, Pam just...
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is making a lot of sense. Yeah,
Pam's a terrible human being.
Yeah, she's like my least favorite character on the show. I don't understand how like you could not have Jim anywhere on this list.
If it was, if I could put like Jim and Dwight, they are up there. If Jim and Daryl up there, like Jim's interactions with Jim and Tope up there, whatever. Jim and Michael definitely up there. I can't get over Jim. Because of how much he is there with Pam, because Pam's just the worst. And, like, it just brings Jim down. Like, so it's a weird caveat where if you could tell me, like, put pairings of who I like to see on the screen together, Jim would be up there way more. But I can't list him as one of my favorite characters or one of the best characters because of Pam.
So can I give you my hottest hot take when it comes to The Office?
Let's go.
Michael does not deserve to be top five in the show.
That is a hot take.
I don't like. I find everything else about the show so much more funny and entertaining than I find like the cringy stuff with him. And I love Steve Carell. I think Steve Carell is a phenomenal actor, and I can understand why. But after watching the whole thing over and over again, I understand why he did not want to get pigeonholed as Michael Scott, because like it just there are times when I'm just like, that's not funny. There's so much about the show that is so fucking funny, and like Michael Scott is probably 50% of the time Michael Scott is the guy that I'm like, oh yeah, that's hilarious.
So who are your five favorite characters?
I mean, I think you got three of the five like right off the bat. I don't think there's any argument for Kevin Malone. I don't think there's any argument for Creed. And I don't think there's any argument for Dwight. Like, I would probably have Dwight number one. Because everything that he does, especially his interactions with Jim, like, just fucking ends me, dude. I would have those in probably in some order with Jim as my top four. I would probably have Dwight one, Kevin two, Jim three. And then Creed 4. I also like the Ryan call top 5.
Yeah, Ryan. You know who's a sneaky, I almost put it like in my honorable mentions, that would be a hot take, is Roy. I laugh my ass off with Roy. Just because he's such a smart ass in like when he's dating Pam, where they're doing like, it was just on, and they're doing the characters, and they're all sitting around the thing, and they're like, he's like, who's that tight ass Christian with the blonde hair? And Angela goes, me? He's like, oh yeah, what's up? And he's the perfect dumb smartass, and I laugh at that stuff just so much.
Yeah. You know give me your three worst, like the three people that when they're on the screen, you're like, all right, come on.
Pam, I can't stand. I don't like Nelly, and I don't like Will Ferrell's character, D'Angelo. I don't really, those three are probably my three least favorite.
Yeah, I'm not a, I didn't love Will Ferrell in the show.
No, like I love.
I don't like Angela. Will Ferrell is funny in moments. Like in Old School, he is absolutely phenomenal. Perfect role for him. I didn't love Angela either. Like, I'm not a big Angela guy.
Yeah, she's just kind of there for me. Like, I don't have like a strong opinion on her either way.
She's necessary to kind of keep the show moving and like for some plot lines, but she doesn't have to be there. Same with Oscar. Like, what's he providing the show?
Yeah, he's the perfect just prototype of somebody in your like cube life, though.
I never lived that cube life.
I know. But that's what I'm saying. As someone who did, like, he's the perfect prototype of somebody that like I know. I've worked with Oscars before.
Have you ever worked with Kevin Malone?
No, I haven't. I was trying to think of people like who I could kind of be like, okay, like that's definitely like the exaggeration of this person I've worked with. I can't think of anybody like Kevin.
What was the name of the guy? I'm blanking on his name. Gabe.
Oh, Gabe. Gabe cracks me up.
Gabe cracks you up?
Because they just, the way they make fun of him, like Creed, he shows up one time and Creed just goes, look, it's to Aaron. He goes, look, it's the Birdman. You used to do him. I love how Gabe just gets roasted nonstop because again, like he plays perfectly into it. And I like his character in Silicon Valley is perfect too. I'm a big fan of, I can't remember the actor's name, but the actor who plays Gabe.
Zach Woods.
Is that his name? Never would have guessed.
He's fine. Whatever. I could have done without his character. Same with Meredith. Like that, the whole Meredith plot line, it never got me.
Yeah. Never thought it was funny. Meredith has some good one-liners. I'm a big fan of the like secondary and tertiary characters in The Office. I think they do a great job of just kind of cracking the one-liners and getting in. Like if I could also put somebody up there, Florida Stanley would be like a top five character for me. I love Florida Stanley.
Oh man, you know what show I've been watching a ton of, which is actually kind of like The Office, I think, is Schitt's Creek.
So
you watch that, right?
So good. I've watched the first five seasons. I haven't watched the most recent one yet.
I think I just started it. Like my wife put me on it. She's probably done. She's watching it right now in the other room.
I watched it last year, like last summer.
I'm halfway into the second season right now.
Both Levies, Eugene Levy, the father, and Daniel Levy, the son, are just so funny. And I can't get over the mom from Home Alone being the mom, like Moira.
It's so perfect that the mom from Home Alone or the dad from American Pie and super rich and having all of their money taken away because of a bad investment. Like, it's just perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Like, they're just shitheads kids. Like, Alexis is one of the best characters out there.
The kids are what makes the show to me. I don't even know what her, what's the mom's name?
Moira.
Yeah, I could do without Moira. I could do without the dad. Like they're just kind of fine. Like they're not bad. They're good. But the kids just are so good. Yeah. And Daniel Levy's character is so fucking funny because like he reminds me of every kid that when I moved to DC, he reminded me of every one of the people that I hung out with when I moved to DC. Just like the complete exaggeration of them as a human being.
Right.
He's so funny. So funny.
They have the perfect interaction too, him and Alexis, the daughter, like they're his sister. They have the perfect interaction back and forth. I love when Alexis just starts roasting him. Like when she gets frustrated.
I love everything about it. She was just David.
It's so if you have not watched Schitt's Creek, go watch it because it is unbelievable.
It's the perfect binge show for being quarantined.
Yeah, and it's like especially if you're in a relationship, it is a perfect show that you can watch with your significant other.
Yes, I tried to get my wife to watch Uncut Gems with me the other night, and I loved it. I thought it was a great movie. I'm probably going to watch it again at some point, but she hated it. Like she went to bed halfway through.
Yeah.
She was like, why do you like this? I'm like, it's awesome. How are you not like, is KG going to like hit this over? Like, is he going to hit the bet? Is this going to happen? Like, I was sweating out the bet in the movie, like as badly, worse than I sweat out bets in real life.
It's good work.
My wife was like, this is the dumbest, like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
It's because you're a degenerate and you're just craving having some action again.
Yes, I am so badly. I've been playing online poker, dude. Like, it's bad. It's so bad.
I understand it.
All right, Riggs. Well, listen, man, it's been long enough. As always, please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast. As soon as you're done doing that, go find the Fundamentally Sound podcast, rate, review, subscribe to that. It's probably where Riggs' best work is done. Like, I just get the scraps here. If you've been staying this long, I appreciate it. It must mean you really like the podcast. So please give us 5 stars. Say something nice about us, especially about Riggs. He needs a confidence boost.
I know. I'm sitting at home, man.
All right, man. I'll talk to you.
All right. We'll